I'm going to pick both conference finals. I'm going to react to the reaction of Pat Beverly just smoking my guy on TV for two straight days. Logan Murdoch's going to talk Western and Eastern Conference finals with us, and he also did a piece on the Suns. And we have an extended life advice for you, so get ready. It's the Ryan Russillo podcast presented by FanDuel. Take a shot at betting the NBA with FanDuel, America's number one sports book. Right now, you can check out the new and improved Parlay Hub. Filter by odds, sport, and bet type to easily find the most popular parlays and same-game parlays all on one page. Plus, start betting the Explore page and the Pulse and bet live same-game parlays for every NBA game. So download the app today and bet with FanDuel, official partner of the NBA. The Ringer is committed to responsible gaming. Please visit rg-help.com to learn more about the resources and helplines available. And listen to the end of the episode for additional details. Must be 21 and older and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. When I went on my last holiday to Cape Town, it was amazing. My friends were there, the weather was phenomenal, and most importantly, the food was fantastic. But one thing I struggled with was finding the right places to stay. You know, all I want is a great bed, a fantastic shower, and breakfast that doesn't end at 8 a.m. I'm on holiday, I'm still sleeping. I also like ease, and the Hotels.com app easily helps me to find a perfect hotel for every trip. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly getaway or a relaxing spa weekend, on the Hotels.com app, you can compare up to 5 hotels side by side. Now, why would you want to do that? So you can see prices, amenities, and star ratings. And best of all, you don't have to switch back and forth between options. See? Ease. So, start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app today.
How's it going, everyone? I'm doing great. Thanks for asking. It's been not even 48 hours since one of the worst Game 7s I've ever seen. I think a lot of people that listen to this podcast, listen to Bill's podcast, so you probably already heard me. I don't know that I was great on that pod. It wasn't because I was so upset. It was just, I just didn't really know. There wasn't really a counter for what happened. So why come up with one? Why try to come up with one? So I didn't. So I'm going to make a statement about statements after this. But first, I want to pick both conference finals. We start in the East. Okay, so I think you guys have heard me enough now that you you probably could guess I'm going to pick Boston against Miami. All right? This is a very odd, wide-open conference finals. I still don't know that we fully comprehend what we had throughout the teens. And that was starting with Miami. I mean, you can even go back to Boston putting together that big three. It just felt different. People were less pissed about it because the players were older. I also think there may have been, not that I always agree, there's this anti-Miami stuff that I used to hear when half the lineup was from Miami on radio. But that might have been a bit anti-Miami when people were so upset. And maybe they were just so anti-LeBron because he was the number one guy, right? Right. So if we go back to the first incarnation of LeBron's big three with Miami, and then what started happening with Golden State and LeBron going back to Cleveland with that group, although Love and Kyrie, you know, it still doesn't feel to the level of Wade and Bosch. And then again, once you have Steph, KD and Klay, that takes you all the way through 2019. And so that became the norm. That became the norm for us as basketball fans of like, okay, well, who do I expect to win? Well, who are their three guys? I mean, even when the Lakers grabbed Anthony Davis, the entire conversation was built around, okay, yeah, but who's the third? And then I think what we had to do was look around and saying, well, if the thirds are the three guys on each team are somewhat diminished, whether it's Klay not playing for 2 years, LeBron being with only one other guy with Anthony Davis, looking around at Milwaukee going, okay, is Drew Holiday somebody who counts? Because if we look at the most recent championships, I guess we could argue Drew, Middleton, and Giannis last year. Maybe it would have been Paul, Booker, and Ayton in Phoenix. And even in Toronto in 2019, you know, I'm not 100% sure that one like registers a big three, even if we, you know, after Kawhi and Lowry, Siakam, I mean, you know, then I start feeling like we're just trying to name a third guy on some of these basketball teams. So something that became the norm with how we try to project who was going to win an NBA title for all those years. Like, it almost took, I still feel like there are times it's like, hey, remember now, that's not really what we have. And again, maybe we still have in Milwaukee, if you understand the point, but it's not this overwhelming title, like powerhouse trio of players that we were very conditioned to having for like 10 years. So that's why when you look at these four remaining teams, Boston's got their two, Miami's got two, is, you know, Lowry at this point with his hamstring, if you watched him at all in that Philly series, like, that's major, major concern. Dallas, we're not going to get to three. And Golden State, like, in theory has three guys with Green, Clay, and Steph, but Clay hasn't played that well. All right. So I think the talent disparity between Boston and Miami is significant. And I also feel like when you look at what Boston did against Giannis and Kevin Durant, it should be easier against Jimmy Butler. And Jimmy Butler, by the way, has been insane. If you look at the traditional numbers from where Butler was 2 years ago when they were in the finals, the numbers are up dramatically for Butler. But the, I mean, right now he's 29-8-5. But the advanced stuff is way beyond. The advanced stuff is like a massive jump from when Butler looked like one of the best players in the league 2 years ago, carrying that team to the NBA Finals. Now, my counter to that would still always be they played Atlanta and they played a super messed up Philadelphia. But Butler still was the engine that made this thing go. And I still obviously really like Bam a lot. But if you look at what Boston did against KD and Giannis, Giannis, this is holding Giannis to 34-15-7 in a seven-game series. But his shooting percentage was 46-23%, all right? He was at 58% against Chicago, and he's 55% this season. He was 57% last season. So holding Giannis to those traditional numbers doesn't seem like you did anything, but that he was 46% and the assists started to dip off a little bit too there at the end. That's actually a win for any team defending Giannis. Let's look at Durant. Durant played 55 regular season games this year. He's 52-38% from the floor in three. Against Boston, he was 26-6-6, which is down from like 30 points a game in the regular season, but he was at 39% overall and 33%. So Boston has shown, and now that they get Rob Williams back, that they can gear up. Again, it's not like they stopped Giannis, but they made him less efficient, which is the entire goal. Butler's still going to get a ton of points. They need to make him less efficient. And I also think when Bam diced up the interior of Boston 2 years ago in their conference finals, Boston did not have the size options that they have now. So I'm picking Boston. Dallas is kind of like Western Conference Boston. They were 16-18 late in December. They traded bad contracts for bad contracts. And as Bill and I covered this at length on Sunday night, it did not dawn on me that it wasn't about who was coming in. It was that you no longer have to pretend that Porzingis is a number two option on a basketball team. And they've always been really good offensively. I would not argue, even though Dallas had the greatest offensive efficiency number we'd ever seen 2 years ago, that that's the greatest offense that I've ever seen. It was kind of a rising tides thing that's happened with so many of these offenses. And the fact the league has been a lot easier to score in, not so much the first half of this season, but this is something that's been happening for a while. We've talked about it. When I look at Dallas, I go, it's a completely different team now because they actually buy in defensively. They know their assignments. Luka, by the way, who got torched in those first two games against Phoenix, where you're like, man, this is actually bad. Like, that changed. It changed entirely. Here's another thing that Dallas did. Dallas attacked Chris Paul worse than Pat Beverly on television. And we'll get to that in a second. Don't worry about it. If you look at Second Spectrum's rankings of the last 10 years of looking at like how many actions a guy could be put in, how many times his man he's defending is setting the screen so that, you know, you're going to get caught up trying to defend all of this stuff. And usually it just means you're undersized, especially against Luka. The top five games in the last 10 years of Chris Paul's playoff career where he was used in pick and roll, five of those games were in this series. And it was after games one and two. So it's all the other ones, leading from 13 times to 24 times they did it to him in game seven. They did it to him 24 times in game seven. And he was not up for it. And you know what else? No one who's small is up for it against Luka because it doesn't matter. And that's the craziest thing about the Luka injury at the beginning, because I was like, I don't know, man, that calf injury looked bad. And even when he came back, he looked a little banged up. But to remind us all, you're like, okay, but Luka doesn't exactly need burst and quickness and quick cutting. He just has so much size. So even Mikal Bridges, who is a really good defensive player, both at the rim, switching, you know, perimeter. Like, after a while, you're just like, yeah, you're just going to go for a ride here, man. There's not much you can do. He's going to, if he decides to put you in the mixer, it's over. And when I think about Golden State's matchups with this, I'm not sure. I'm going to say it this way. I know what they're probably going to try to do, but I don't know what Golden State's going to do to try to counter it, because, I mean, it's fairly obvious. They're probably going to target some of the smaller wings. Does that mean Draymond gets involved quicker with Luka? Is that a mistake? Because then you're getting him in a switch, and then Luka's switched up with somebody else. You know, there's some of this pre-switching stuff that you can try to do that some teams are really good at, but it's not always easy to do because you're trying to do something ahead of what the other team is doing. And if they don't do it, then you could be out of position on top of everything else. So we'll see. It feels like a Dallas pick based on all the stuff I just said. And there's also a part of me with Golden State. It's like, okay, I know they're undefeated at home. Now they have home court advantage because they have the best remaining win-loss record. But should a team be down like 50-plus to somebody and then still feel like, yeah, that team will win the title? But then, you know, Dallas... Dallas didn't look like they were going to be winning an NBA championship the first couple games of that Phoenix series. So this is new. It's uncharted territory. It feels very new for me, something we haven't felt in a long time, where there's not this one remaining team with the personnel, the headlining personnel that goes three deep that you're like, oh my gosh, how's anybody going to beat those guys? Because Klay's not Klay right now. And even Steph's shooting numbers haven't been terrific. And Draymond has zero interest even looking at the rim. Like, he doesn't even want to keep teams honest. And that might get really weird against Dallas. So it's a total coin toss for me. I've sounded like I'm arguing Dallas for the pick. I'll go ahead and take Golden State, but I don't feel great about it at all. Final thought here. A lot of people have reached out. A lot of people reached out checking on your guy. It is appreciated. I mean, I have guys who don't even know me that well being like, hey, what the hell's going on with this Chris Paul thing in you? I'm like, well, you felt like such a loser being like, I'm a huge Chris Paul fan. I've made some very strong arguments on his behalf, which I felt like I had real evidence for, but there's another group that thinks he's like the biggest choke artist of all time. And now he's got some stuff on his resume, including the worst game seven I've ever seen that would tell you that I've been wrong this whole time. I've been living a lie. Nobody feels good when you say that out loud, right? So, a lot of texts from friends, about this. So, you know, we're good. We're going to be good over here. Could I work myself into why a couple of the 2-0 series losses aren't that bad? Could I do that? Now's not the time. Now's not the time to do that. Could I, like a phoenix from the ashes in a couple months? I tell you, I felt like doing it after watching the Pat Bev clips. I'm not going to lie. I mean, have we ever found somebody better for television? And those clips are getting sent to me all day being like, how mad are you? I go, well, what do you want me to do? I'm a grown man. I'm not going to stew with anger. I do that enough for other reasons. But what do you want me to do? Pat Bev, who hates Chris Paul, being invited to go on TV after Chris Paul and the Suns blow this 2-0 lead and have the worst game seven I've ever fucking seen. Like, can you imagine? TV, after he got done that first day, they were like, hey, do you want to come on and shit on any other players that lose in the playoffs? Done, man. And yeah, I'm not going to take Pat Bev's side in any of this because I know he just doesn't like Chris Paul. And the fact that he would act like Chris Paul sucks, it's like, dude, he gave you 42 in like 35 minutes last year in game six and bounced you and you shoved him and you didn't play for the Clippers after that move. So like, where was that last year? You want to you know, circle the wagons now. I get it. And then I guess Beverly came back on, Cerruti. He's on again today.
He did round two today. I mostly saw the clips today, but I think it was Get Up, the usual. It was First Take again. I think JJ was on. And here's the thing. Yesterday was kind of fun. I was a little annoyed by it. I think you were, but I think generally people enjoyed it. They're like, oh, this is kind of fun, even if they realize that he's completely biased. Yeah,
he's thinking, doing something different. Right.
Yeah, I was thinking, right. Like, did ESPN find their new LeVar Ball? Like, he just goes on there and says the craziest shit, and, like, it gets everybody pissed off, but everybody was talking about it. So I guess, you know, I'm not going to tell them how to do television. It probably worked.
For television, this is absolutely a no-brainer
home run.
Win.
Right. Home run.
This is how television works.
Yep. And that's why LeVar Ball was on show after show saying his son was better than Michael Jordan.
Until ESPN was like, okay, enough. Like, I would hear about some of LeVar's requests towards the end, And the guys that were in his camp in the beginning and then towards the end, they're like, now we think he's just fucking with us. LeVar will call and be like, I need this and I need this. And they'd be like, okay, fine. We'll send you this and we'll do this. And they would call back 20 minutes later, change my mind. I need this. And they were doing it for him for a little while. And then I think LeVar tried to see what he could get away with. So anyway, back to your Pat Bev stuff. So go
ahead. Can I say this too, though? You've seen the LeVar Ball, LaMelo Ball AT&T commercial. I've completely done a 180 on the Ball family after that commercial. That commercial is fantastic. When he's like at AT&T trying to win a month. And he's like, my son, like, ain't nothing he can't do. It's amazing. Anyway, yes, Pat Bev, like today. Here's the thing, though. He's back on today. He's great. It's fun. Everybody's laughing. They know it's kind of tongue in cheek. They know he's mostly wrong too, but it doesn't really matter if you're wrong on that show. But then the next day when you do it again, like your flaws sort of start coming out a little bit more. And it's like when you date someone for a long period of time, you're like, oh wait, she's actually terrible. Like she doesn't have good hygiene. She's not clean.
Wow.
Like you just kind of see some of the warts, and that's what we saw today with Pat Bev. I mean, for example, like, you know, he's talking about how, you know, everyone in the league wanted to play the Suns in round one. And like, you know, he didn't need a good, nice rest before playing Chris Paul, but he needed to like go to bed at 8 p.m. when he was playing Steph Curry. But then like right after that, he's like, I would give Harden the Supermax, and any other team, if Philly doesn't get, you know, give it to him, is going to give him the Supermax. And J.J. Redick corrects him as like, well, actually only Philly can give him the Supermax. Like they're just like little things that he's getting exposed on. And I thought Van Lathan had a great tweet. He just said, simply, Pat Bev blew a 3-1 lead today, because he did. Like he had all the momentum yesterday and he just did a little bit too much by coming back today.
I know he said that Chris Paul, because he gets State Farm ads, that's why he gets calls in the game and stuff.
Come on.
I can't win. If you don't like Chris Paul, you want to hear from me right now. So I'm not a great guy to talk to about Pat Bev, but it has been a cycle of texts and check-ins and phone calls from people, and also like attachments. Did you see Pat Bev do this? How mad are you? We're on to the conference finals, folks.
Right. Not on your radar.
24-hour rule. We have moved on. We shall see what happens after this.
I will say, Ryan, I'm happy that people are reaching out to you, though, because what do they say? You know, like when you're at your lowest point, you find out who your real friends are. And it sounds like you got a lot of great friends. They were all checking in. So I'm happy for you, dude.
I feel actually like a bigger loser. So many people are reaching in. It's not what you said is nice, and that would be great. I felt like a much bigger loser after the fact of like, Jesus, do people think I'm this fucked up about it? And I guess they did.
I don't know. It's good to be known for something. And
is it?
You know. Yeah, you're the Chris Paul guy. So, you know, I think anyone who watches basketball is more on your side than they are Pat Bev's side. It's just that we see Twitter and we see everyone clown on everybody. But I don't know. I think.
And by the way, his quad was hurt. So I got nothing to lose.
Yeah, exactly. Give him a pass. Come on. Next year.
All right. Let's talk with Logan Murdoch. The playoffs are heating up, and you can make every game feel like Game 7 on FanDuel Sportsbook, an official partner of the NBA. Throughout the playoffs, all customers can place a no-sweat same-game parlay each week. You'll get up to $20 in free bets if you don't win. FanDuel has so many ways to play, and best of all, when you do win, you'll get paid faster than a fast break. Okay, let's take a look at the same-game parlays for tonight. We got some odd boosters. You guys ready for that? Jimmy Butler and Bam each score 15 or more points. Tyler Hero makes 2+3s. That's paying out at +250, up from 175. Gosh, that feels like a lock. That might have already happened with the game not even starting. And on the other side's the odd boosted here on this one, the Hulu NBA boost. Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Grant Williams, each to make 2+3s. That's +220, up from 155. All right. So if we look at now the line here, Miami is favored in this game. Boston's favored for the series. And Bill covered that really well on Sunday night, by the way, coming off that tough physical game 7 series with Milwaukee, the rare road. Well, not a road dog, but to be favored in the series, but a dog in game 1 coming off of that. All right, so Victor Oladipo, -130 to score 10 or more points. Make one or more three. Anybody make any sense here? Could be. PJ Tucker's usually good for one corner three, -350. Yeah, he's made a three in every playoff game so far except for 3. So yeah, that's pretty good. And then first quarter total points. Over under 49.5. All right, let's stay with that. See if Boston's exhausted and Miami's trying to feel out a defense that's far superior to what they've faced the last two times through. Okay, so those are a lot of options with even a little bit of research. So enjoy. New to FanDuel. Just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app and sign up with the promo code Ryan so they know that I sent you. That's R-Y-E-N. Once again, that's promo code Ryan. And if you already have an account, you're all set to bet. No sweat. Either way, you'll get up to $20 in free bets if your same game parlay during the playoffs doesn't win. FanDuel Sportsbook, an official partner of the NBA. Must be 21 and older in select states. Refund issued with non-withdrawable free bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Max free bet, $20 per week. Restrictions apply. See full terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXTSTEP to 53342 in Arizona. 1-800-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org/chat in Connecticut. 1-800-GAMBLER or visit fanduel.com/RG in Colorado, Iowa, Indiana, Illinois, New Jersey, PA, Virginia, or 1-877-770-STOP in Louisiana, 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help. Michigan, 1-877-8-HOPE, New York, or text HOPE, New York, 467-369, New York. Tennessee Redline, 1-800-889-9789, Tennessee, or visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net, West Virginia. This episode is brought to you by Arby's, the perfect sandwich. Let me think. Buffalo chicken sandwich is done right, can change your life. I've never been the same in the best way possible when I experienced my first one. Also loving to travel, I've had gyros, also known as gyros. I think if you go to Arby's and you order a gyro, they're not going to judge you. And that's what I like about them. Nice chicken, perfectly sauced, butter lettuce, good body. You know what I'm talking about. And that's what Arby's has. They have more than you may even realize. Get out there and explore. Well, now is the chance to try Arby's and find your favorite sandwich. With a wide range of options, see for yourself that Arby's sells more than roast beef. Plus, for a limited time, Arby's Rewards members get one free sandwich with purchase every week in April online only. Simply join Arby's Rewards and order ahead today. Order on the app or Arby's.com. This episode is supported by State Farm. So look, a little rock hit your dude's windshield on the highway. And at first, you're like, what is that? I'm like, oh, it's just a little mark. Nope. Now, by the end of the ride, it's a big crack. And it'd been a while. So I check out the State Farm app. I go, hey, this is what happened. And the funny thing is I was like, do I want to go app first or do I call? Old school guy, probably should call. It's like, let's check out the app. Not only did it take a minute to get done, they set up the glass replacement. They told me the estimate ahead of time, said, you want to go ahead with it? And I was like, now I understand. It's all in front of me, all done. I don't even have to talk to anybody. That's how efficient the insurance game has become. But really, the only words you need to remember are, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. State Farm has options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, just like I did, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to somebody. The app was so good, I didn't even need to do that. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Learn more at statefarm.com. Logan Murdoch, Ringer, has a piece out on the Suns. We'll probably spend a little time on that. Of course, The Real Ones drops Monday nights with Rajah Bell. All right, I opened up today going, hey, it's wide open. There's no one that's horrifying to go up against. You know, we could sit here and rank the teams and all that kind of stuff, but the Dallas Golden State one is tough, I think, for a lot of people, because I don't want to be dismissive of Dallas. And then it's like, wait, are they actually just this awesome? And is it actually maybe a bad matchup for Golden State? Then I'm like, okay, but Golden State's at home. You know, Phoenix also kind of fell apart. So like, there's a ton of uncertainty for me on this one. I pick Golden State. I don't feel great about it. I feel more certain about the Eastern Conference. But let's start with the West.
I was talking to Raja about this earlier this week. And I don't have a good gauge on this Mavs Golden State series either. Now, on paper, Golden State should win. It's not even a question. But when you look at it, there are some faulty pieces right here, because Luka is one of those guys, and I see him with like 18 LeBron, with this year's Giannis, where it is a one man show, but it really doesn't matter because that one man is so good. They're going to put Luka in the post. He's bigger than he's everybody. Bigger than the guy. He's bigger except than everybody. He's
right. Other than Looney or Porter, maybe.
Maybe, right? But I wouldn't trust Looney on Luka, and I'm not going to trust Porter on long stretches of Luka. So then what do you have? You're going to put Draymond on him? I don't know, because they're going to put Draymond typically on the big because they play so small. The Warriors play so small. Then you're going to put Wiggins on him. As Roger said, Wiggins is light in the ass, so we'll see what happens on that one. And then you go down the line. You go put Poole on him? No, you're not going to put Poole on him. And then you're going to switch him on to Steph. That's going to be hard, so... they're going to have to figure out their Luka thing. I don't know if that's playing zone. I don't know if that is just trapping Luka every time you see him. But it's going to be a tough, tough matchup. It could go five games. It could also go seven. I don't know.
Yeah, because I'm with you. If you go team for team, and that's why I'm always going to struggle with a team like Dallas, because I usually don't like the ISO-heavy teams with the one guy. But the one guy is also interested in letting other people eat. And yeah, that's a little different than the high usage rates that we have with other players at times. I feel like Luka actually does want to get other people involved, and Jalen's development has eased the burden of him feeling like it's every single time. So, yeah. But if I go down like the list and I'm like, wait, I'm at player number four maybe, and it's Jordan Poole. And who's player number four who I think is as talented as Jordan Poole in Dallas? Like, it's going to be hard for me to figure out who that fourth guy is. I mean, and I'm not going to sit here because Spencer Dinwiddie went off in game seven and act like everybody loves Spencer Dinwiddie all of a sudden, okay?
Who, by the way, played terrible in the last series against Phoenix for the most part. If you go look at his overall performance, didn't play well. One other thing, though, Ryan, two things. One, I've been concerned about is we haven't talked about this for a while, but Luka's health, right? He does have a calf injury, which is something to look at. I don't know. It's something I thought he was fine.
At this point,
I think he's fine. It's just hard. And the second thing is, to your overall point about the Mavericks, they're a team that you can't quite figure out until you do. And it reminds me a lot of that 2011 Mavs team where we couldn't put a finger on them and we couldn't really kind of figure them out. They beat Portland and they went and beat LA. They sweeped LA. And then they they beat a young Thunder team. And then they ended up playing the Heat. And then we kind of figured it out. Oh, man, this team is special in hindsight. But during the run, we couldn't really figure them out. This team, the Mavs, I feel like they are kind of cut from that cloth where they're not supposed to be here necessarily on paper. But I think when we go out and we kind of have the benefit of hindsight in the next few months, we're going to see, oh, this team was better than we thought they were, and we didn't have any answer for them.
Yeah. No, I can totally see it. The 11 comp is perfect because you were never going to run through the rosters of the Miami Heat at that point and then run through Dallas's roster and feel like, oh, yeah, no, it's close. So, you know, I don't know who to go with next. And they figured some weird, quirky stuff out. The shooting, they had enough shooting all of a sudden out of nowhere. They changed up what they were doing defensively. And, you know, I think maybe LeBron's first run through also played in that storyline there a little bit. So that's not going to be the case with Golden State here. But all right, if we look at Golden State, there's also an argument to be made of like, so I'm going to pick a team to get to the finals that was down 50 to Memphis without Ja. So shouldn't that be some sort of red flag? I don't know if the Mike Brown thing means anything. He's been with his team forever. I know watching the game, whether it was them coming back and winning game four and then what happened in game five, I was like, is he letting these guys kind of do whatever they want and they're not implementing maybe zone a little bit sooner or any of this kind of stuff? I don't know if that's fair or not. Game six, I thought Golden State would win it. I thought they'd win it a little bit easier. They had to turn it on late there. So I can't tell, like, shouldn't the Memphis thing be a bit of a red flag without Ja too?
I don't. It's funny because I think I came on here earlier this season and I had a better understanding of what Golden State is and was at that point. I think this time I don't know if you know, if you were to ask me after the first round, you know, at Denver, I would say, oh yeah, it's going to be Warriors, Phoenix going into the Western Conference Finals, and you know, it's going to be a 7-game series. We'll figure it out. Right now, I don't know. I can't really put a pulse on this team. And a lot of that has to do with the guys that we expect to play well haven't played well during the postseason. Steph hasn't shot the ball well at all. He didn't play well in that closeout game. If he plays well and Clay plays well, they blow the Memphis out. But they haven't been as consistent on that end. Poole has been targeted defensively on switches. you know, they at times they look a bit old. At other times they look like, oh, they're supposed to win these games. But I don't know, man. And I think on the one hand, the Mavericks playing the way they play against Phoenix gives me pause and is like, hey, man, they could probably beat Golden State. But then the institution that is Golden State is like, oh, well, Golden State should win this series. It's really a different balancing act. And I really don't know where to go here, Ryan. I have no idea. I think the first game is really going to tell us a lot about how this series is going to go. And we're going to see, because the great equalizer to everything Golden State does is Luka. And they're going to have to figure something out with defending him.
Yeah, he's going to go off. I mean, it's going to be horrifying for stretches. They're going to feel like there's nothing they can do. The light in the ass comment about Wiggins is spot on, because the same thing with Bridges. Like, Bridges is a great defensive player. You got no chance. You're going for a ride, you know? Mm-hmm. And Wiggins, you know, who I think at times we felt like finally he figured out the defensive side of this, and I still don't think it's consistent enough with him. So Golden State's going to get into some really bad switches, and Luka's going to dominate, and they're going to win some games that way. But you hope that Golden State, if you're rooting for them on the other side, can start – you know, running crazy and actually being small by wanting to be small. Because there's like another thing I'm thinking about big picture wise with basketball, where I feel like you need a five out lineup you kind of like, even if you have a center and someone, but if you don't have some kind of five out lineup to get you ready for the playoffs, I think you're building your team wrong. And it's a lot easier said than done going, hey, we want a traditional center that we can hang with for 82 games of the regular season, that we can match somebody else's size with, but we also want this small ball thing that we have. I at least know with Golden State, like, their small ball thing is going to be second nature to them, where Phoenix doesn't have that option. They just never did.
Yeah, it's funny because the Warriors going small ball this season was pretty much out of necessity. They don't really have a traditional big on the roster, right? They just have Looney is their biggest big. And I was watching film of Looney from 2018. He looks like a completely different person. He looks like as skinny as me in 2018. Now he's bulked up and become a center. He's played really well, but the Warriors are going to win if they put Draymond at the five and they just figure it out from there. That's what they have to do. Now, The problem lies is when, you know, Steph is not shooting well and when Klay isn't shooting well, and these guys, and I remember when I looked at this series against Memphis, I saw a team that knew they could outsmart Memphis at the end of the day when the chips were down. They figured that out. And even if they weren't playing their best basketball, I'm not going to say that, you know, like, that Dallas is just meant to beat them. But I think Dallas is going to be a lot more prepared down the stretch than Memphis was. And that's going to be something to say. I mean, the Warriors played like shit the first two games against Memphis and probably should have been up 2-0 in that series because of just all the mistakes that Memphis made down the stretch. I don't know if Dallas is going to make those, but it's going to be an interesting series. And the battle of the small ball is going to be really, really fun to watch in this series.
Yeah, there are going to be times Luka's the biggest player on the floor.
Yeah, you know? And he's playing point.
Right, you're right. Okay, let's go over to the East. This one I feel a little bit more certain about. I like Boston. I like him as far as having more depth with top-end scoring and having more options to throw at Bam, who really crushed them on some of those just plays where he would trail the ball to the rim. It was just horrifying. They couldn't do anything with it. And I think Miami played an awful Atlanta team and a Philly team that was a total mess. And Boston slowed down Durant, slowed down Giannis. So on paper, I feel much stronger about this one.
Yeah. So this is interesting. I actually don't have a pulse on this one. I think that on the one hand, I see that the two best players in the series are on Boston, which typically shows that, hey, Boston's probably going to win the series. However, I'm just not. And I know we just talked about going small ball and things like that. But with Robert, do we have a gauge on what Robert Williams is going to be in the conference finals? Because the Boston kind of needs their front court against a guy like Bam Adebayo in the battle of the front courts. I guess I'd give the edge to Boston, but I'm not quite sure. It's going to be a tough series. Miami has home court advantage. That's going to play a big role in this series. If Boston wins, it has to be in six, in my opinion. And that means they got to take one in Miami in the first thing. It's going to be a tough series. I think it's going to be a long series. I don't have a pulse on it, though.
Wait, so you think Jaylen and Tatum are both better than Butler?
Yeah, I do. I think that Jimmy Butler is a really great player. He's a really, really, really good player. I think the ceiling is bigger with Tatum at this point in his career. I do. I really do.
Right. Tatum.
I think that he's...
So no argument on Tatum. I guess basically I'm saying you. I was surprised that you thought Butler was better than Jalen, or that Jalen Brown's better than Jimmy Butler. Tatum, I'm not surprised.
I think you can make the argument. I think you can make the argument in that. And the way they've been playing, if you put them, they're both, their two best guys, I think, are better than Miami's two best guys. I'll say that, yes.
That's cool. I just feel like Butler, you know, a bit on a tear here. But again, it might be, you know, opposition her a little. Although he did have moments in that Philly series where it didn't feel like it mattered, you know.
The thing with Jimmy, though, which is fun, is he needs an adversary. And I think in the last series against Philly, he had that. And he plays super well when he has his back against the wall. And he has a team that he necessarily doesn't like, or he has a problem with a certain team. I'm not going to say that he doesn't have that against Boston, but I know in Philly, that puts an extra angst into him, and that gives him an extra battery in his back. I still stand by it, though. I do think that in the series, I do like Jalen and Jason over that the two in Miami.
Yeah, no, that's fine. And then you add in the Lowry piece of it all. Your interactions with coaches, where would you put Spo?
My interactions with coaches with Spo, I think he's right at the top of the list. Obviously, he's in the Eastern Conference, but I think that he is a guy that everything you've heard about him is just first class. I remember even during the pandemic, I heard that he was a guy that for some of the guys that weren't getting paid, you know, that weren't getting paid, like the younger guys maybe in the video room and during that time that were probably on, that weren't having staff positions but were, you know, getting paid hourly, he was fronting the bill for them. You know, he was making sure that they were taken care of during the pandemic. And everybody that works under Spo and everybody that has been under Spo has said that he is one of those guys that really is a class act and is one of those guys that is really respected, is among the, if you think, I think if you put the top three most respected coaches down the line, I think it's Pop, I think it's Spo, and right now I think that it's Kerr. You know, if you have to go down the line of the guys that people respect, and Spo is just one of those guys. I think because he's in Miami, he may not get as much pub as the other guys, but he is one of those guys that's well respected in this league.
Yeah, the kid story though is pretty crazy, because you know when he got brought in after the Nets and after the Bucks, like, you know, you were kind of like, I wonder where he's going to go with this. I just don't think Jason Kidd was somebody at the time that people thought like, oh, well, he has to get another shot. Like, he'll be terrific. It was kind of like, I don't know. You know, it didn't seem like it vibed that great, and the exits didn't seem all that great. Not that usually coaches leaving at some great time to be celebrated. I do think there's some staff people that, you know, I'm a big fan of with Dallas as well, but at what he's done in Dallas with a group that just never really played defense and they figured this all out. Like, I'm not trying to say Spo. I think Spo's the best coach in all of basketball, but the kid resurgence is probably one of the more surprising coaches stories this year.
Well, it started in the bubble when he was on the Lakers staff, and, you know, he got that LeBron cosign. That was huge for him. And to the point where, you know, there's some reports that LeBron wanted him to be the coach of the team if he wasn't, if, you know, and some other people say he probably was coaching the team behind the scenes with the Lakers during that bubble run. And I think that over the last few years, you know, he's had this resurgence as an assistant where guys just, you know, you have a different relationship with guys when you're an assistant coach. It's a bit more intimate relationship with guys. You can, you talk to guys a lot more when you're an assistant. You go over, you have a lot more one-on-one time. And I think his time with the Lakers really served him well. Anytime that you have a guy like LeBron that gives you a cosign, it will give you a second chance. And I think he's making the most of his third chance right now. He really, to your point, Ryan, is really, it was hard to see him come back to this point because we don't realize the monumental flameouts he had in both Brooklyn and Milwaukee. And to see him now just have this resurgence of, we talk about that clip in Game 7 where he's literally barking out defensive orders to his guys and they are listening to him, you know, they seem like they're playing really hard for this guy. And that's a great sign, especially in the first year right now. And as long as he has buy-in from Luka, he is good. And one other thing, He's feeling himself. He was talking big shit subliminally about Carlisle. I don't know if you saw that clip, but he's talking about how he gives he didn't mention Carlisle by name, but he's saying, yeah, man, the previous coaching staff wasn't letting these guys rock and wasn't letting these guys cook. You know, I'm letting these guys just figure it out on their own. That's what I like to do with my basketball team. I like to let them figure it out. Oh, kid is feeling himself right now. It's been definitely an interesting time for him right now.
But you also brought up another good point, though, too, when you think about, like, the dynamic of the head coach and, like, you know, I know everybody's writing about Mark Jackson again right now. And the biggest thing, well, I don't know, we pick a topic on Mark, but one of the other major problems people had with Mark was that he didn't want to be threatened by anybody on his staff. So it was like, hey, we need to bulk up your staff. You need to listen to people and help them make you an even better coach. And it was like, nope, I don't want to do that. I think as a former player, and I can imagine Kidd as one of the greats we've ever seen, is like, why do I have to listen to like all these younger dude assistants who aren't me? Like, why would I have to listen to any of those guys?
Yeah.
And I think that Laker staff was loaded with Kidd and a couple of the other assistants, and he grabbed a few of them. And it makes me think that there's, you know, a guy like Jason Kidd, I expect him to have a massive ego. He should have an ego.
Yeah. Know?
But if you have some really smart people with you, especially when you're like, hey, let's tweak this. Let's try some of these tweaks. Like, I feel like the game doesn't tweak itself enough. And sometimes you kind of just are who you are, and these are your available players. Like Bill and I were talking about Milwaukee and what they could have done different. And, you know, he brought up a good point of like maybe taking Allen out and putting Carter in. But, you know, then I'm like, okay, but, you know, you kind of are who you are rotationally at times. But I think the former players, it probably takes them a little longer because they've never had their ass kicked, where the lifer assistant is more willing to buy in for working with a group because that guy's had to fight for everything his entire life.
Well, it's interesting, right? Because obviously Jason Kidd is a Hall of Fame, a Hall of Famer, is one of the best point guards of all time, but he had a dose of that. What humble pie, I guess, where, you know, he, you know, early in his coaching career, it didn't end well. There's a lot of anecdotes as to why that didn't end well, but he was on the outside looking in, man. Like I can't tell you how important that Los Angeles Lakers tenure was for him, because it really got him back in. Cause there's a world where Jason Kidd is in the Mark Jackson sphere where he doesn't get an opportunity again, where he doesn't get that second chance, or, you know, get the Tom Thibodeau second, third chance of improving yourself. And kudos to him for adjusting. It's year one. We'll see what happens down the line. We'll see what happens with this team, but he's done really well so far.
Yeah, I mean, as we were talking this over too, I was remembering Miron Fader's book on Giannis, which is terrific, in that there's these kid anecdotes where you're just like, this guy sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. But also the thing is, though, is like, as long as you have buy-in from your best player, who is Luka, you're fine. Yeah. You know, why did Carlisle, who was also one of the best coaches to ever coach basketball, why did not work out with him in Dallas? Because Luka Doncic was like, nah. I can't deal with this anymore. As long as you have buy-in from your top player, you're good. Because Luka's going to be there, God willing, for a long time. And you got to make sure that has that buy-in. And Kidd has found a way to get that buy-in. And I think that's something that he learned, man, because he had buy-in from his last two stops from who? From LeBron James and from Luka Doncic. He learned a lesson. That was that. There you go, right there. As long as you do that, you'll be fine. And I think that as long as he continues to keep his relationship with Luka solid, he'll be straight.
You have a piece up on the Ringer talking about the Phoenix Suns. It's now been a day plus. I touched on it in the open. What do you make of what happened?
We were talking about this to start this pod a little bit, man, and it was, I have a thing about, I'm trying to regroup on this because I'm still just flabbergasted, Ryan. I have this thing about teams that stick their chest out all season and don't back it up. It's a real pet peeve of mine. It happens every year. The Clippers in 2019.
The Clippers probably had about like seven of those.
Yeah, the Rockets 2017, 2018, 2019. A lot of teams that Chris Paul is on, like, really stick their chest out, yep, and they don't back it up in the postseason. That was just really hard to watch. And it was crazy because we're starting to get these stories that are trickling out about the locker room and DeAndre Ayton and all these things. And that wasn't just about how they crumbled down the stretch. And that wasn't the team that I saw a month ago. I was out in Phoenix about a month ago. I was there for the first couple of games in their series against New Orleans. And they seem like a really tight-knit group, you know, that could weather a lot of storms. And something just – when they got punched in the mouth in that game six against Dallas, man, I think in hindsight, that was a big deal. That was a really big deal because when I was watching it, I'm like, oh, they got blown out. Similar to how I saw the Grizzlies Warriors blowout, right? Where it was just like, oh, this isn't an, I felt like that was an anomaly. They'll figure it out when they get home. You know, this is just, okay, the team got hot. The game got away from you. You'll figure it out next one. With the Suns, that was just embarrassing on all levels, man. You won 64 games. You guys were the deepest team in the league. You had a guy like Devin Booker. I was listening to your pod with Bill. I really like Devin Booker. I thought he's the people's champ. He is the guy, the young kid that everybody, every Hall of Famer in the league loves. He has all the right cosigns from KD, from LeBron, from Kobe. He has all these cosigns, and it was very disappointing for him just to, like, not go out swinging. I don't know how you come back from this, bro. I don't know. I don't know how you do this. I don't, like, because this was supposed to be the year where, this was supposed to be the fuck you year, where you lose and you say, fuck you, I'm going to just go all out, balls to the wall, and we're going to figure this out. And I think that was the biggest mistake that they had, because we talk about injuries. This team didn't have the legs to get far in the postseason because they used all those legs during the regular season. You can make that argument. And that has always kind of, and at least in recent memory, bitten a lot of teams in the ass, where, you know, you think about the 73-9 Warriors, where by the end, they're great. They're kicking people's ass in the regular season. They're making all these statement games. And when it comes down to it, they don't have it for whatever reason. And I think I saw that with the Suns, and it's really disappointing because this was supposed to be the team that was going to the finals, that was going to make it happen. Chris Paul was going to win a ring. Devin Booker was supposed to be that dude. And it just didn't happen. They got a little Hollywood, man. They got a little Hollywood at the wrong time.
You have some quotes from James Jones on DeAndre Ayton's future that are pretty ominous here, right? Like, he says, well, he'd be a free agent, so I can't talk about the future, but we basically do want to figure something out and grow with him. But, like, is Jones, the general manager here, is he playing it where he already knows what Sarver wants to do, and he has to be careful about what he says here because it's ultimately going to be a money thing here? And if that's a money thing, I just can't believe that a team would walk away from the asset without trying to figure out a way to supplement the asset moving out.
So that's interesting to me, man, because I asked him that question in April. You know, I asked him that question in the first round, and Ayton was playing really well, but it didn't seem in the moment like a ringing endorsement, right? And
didn't read like it.
It didn't. Yeah, it didn't feel like it. It was like, oh, okay. And then, and my thing with Ayton is, I might be on the side of maybe. I mean, this is yesterday before all the stuff came out. I was on the side of like, yo, give him the max and figure it out later. If you guys want to run this back, if you guys want to run this back, there's no center that you can get with your cap space better than Ayton right now. Unless you do a sign and trade, it's really difficult to figure that out, right? But looking at the landscape of guys that do what Ayton does, and it's really hard to find a guy like that that teams are willing to part with. And so I'm just like, yo, keep him on the team. And I think I still feel that way, but they got to figure that out. They have to, because whether a trade or of some sort. But if you take away Ayton, who has played, you know, has had some bad stretches, but when he was good, I think about game six against the Mavericks, he was the only bit of offense that they had with other guys. I think that you should have him on your roster, because as he graduates and starts to play really well, and Chris Paul starts to, you know, just with age and things like that, his play starts to go down. You need two guys that you could pass the baton to. And I think for years to come, and that's presumably, hopefully, Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton. I don't see another guy right now that you can get for him. This has all been fumbled. This is not, this negotiation has not been good for either side, in my opinion. I don't know the resolution to this, but they got to figure this out, man, because they need a front court guy like Ayton. He's the, you can't replace him with JaVale McGee and Biombo and think it's just going to be all right. It's just not. I think he's going to be one of those guys when he leaves the roster, they're going to feel that. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I don't know what this team is going to look like, Ryan. Do you have any idea what this team is going to look like next year?
If it weren't for Sarver, I'd tell you it's going to look the same and they're going to add some other pieces. I think they need like a Tyus Jones type that can supplement Chris Paul for longer stretches. And that's what I thought, why Paul's hand injury was going to be a blessing in disguise, because that way, all right, well, he wasn't going to be hurt in the playoffs because he was going to get this month break. And I was so pumped for Booker, because what I've always liked about him, because of all the years where he had initiate the offense before they had better players, that he's capable of, you know, getting your offense going and running it and setting things up for other guys. Like, he's capable of being that guy because he's had to do it in the past. So they still kind of held serve for a really long time, even with Paul out. And then I thought, okay, well, Paul will be refreshed. Like, I'm just going to sound like I'm making excuses for him. There's no question something's wrong with Chris Paul in this series.
Yeah.
There's no doubt. And so if you have to, now if you're telling me, well, hey, he was hurt last year and had to get surgery after the finals, he got hurt here, you have to factor that in. You're right. So even if I love Chris Paul, now I have to just give up and admit that you have to have better support. You have to have a much better plan to try to keep him. As much as I love that Chris Paul story that I tell about OKC all the time, where he showed up and Billy Donovan's like, we're going to rest you, you're going to coast, you do this with our young guys for a year, and then we're going to get you somewhere where you need to go. And Chris Paul's like, nah, fuck that, we're playing hoops. And they make it to the playoffs. Like, that's the Chris Paul that I love. But it's also maybe part of the problem now at 37, where, all right, cool, you were completely, like, I don't think that it's a wiring thing. And this is why I'll just argue it. I think there's a wiring thing with Harden that I'll never respect. I don't think that's what Paul has. But unfortunately, now they both have all these awful playoff performances that, if you want to fuck with my argument, you can say, well, hey, it's the same. You can't stand Harden. You love Chris Paul. You're getting the same result every single time. You may be getting similar results, but I don't think you're getting them for similar reasons. And that's the argument that I will say more forcibly in the start of next season. But I'm going to lay out now for a little while.
It's funny, because at the beginning of this season, I remember talking with Ra, and we were talking about Chris Paul. And Raja made up the same argument you did, as having another type of point guard like that. I took it a step further. I said, man, you should play Chris Paul about, not 50-something games, but maybe like 60, 65, play him 20 minutes a game, sacrifice some wins, maybe win, like, instead of going for 64, maybe go for like 51. And then you can have more of those Chris Paul performances in the postseason, like you did against New Orleans, right, where he scores 19 in the fourth quarter of a game one series, right? Or he does have one of those games like he did in that closeout game. But while he did have those games in his postseason, he also had games where, after a first half of basketball, he has his hands on his knees and just dog tired, and is just can't. It doesn't seem like he has just is in shape enough to be able to keep going. And I think next year if they're going to try to run this back, they're going to have less of Chris Paul until it's time to go, because we're just not at this point right now in this career. He's about to be 37, 38. And it's going to take a toll. And also, as we go to that point, Devin Booker has to step up. He has to take another level of his, to take his game to another level, to where it's not Chris Paul's team. Everything is not dictated by what Chris Paul does. Everything is not dictated by what Chris Paul does. And Devin Booker, it's like when Magic took over from Kareem in the 80s, where it was Kareem's team. He's the captain, everything, but nah, I'm going to take this. Don't even trip. I got it. I have to become an MVP. That's what Devin Booker needs to do for this Suns team to continue to be a title contender.
They are a fascinating team that, when it's good, you're like, they've got this big, malleable player and Ayton who can actually get out on the perimeter and defend. And, you know, they don't go to him a ton, but he's always able to finish. And then they've got Bridges, who's this hybrid defender, who's great slasher and can hit threes. And when he gets out of the open court, and then Booker is an MVP candidate this year. And Chris Paul's like always makes the right decisions and super efficient. And even if Jay Crowder's your fifth guy, like you can do a lot worse than that. And now they've got the backup bigs of JaVale and Biombo and, you know, Shamit. If you let him kind of handle a little, he can get hot at the right time. And when it's bad, you're like, Ayton can't hang on to the basketball. Bridges can get 0 points. You don't even notice. Booker. See, I do like Booker a lot, so I don't want to turn. But then it's like Jay Crowder, I don't really trust. I trust when they're down. I trust a three from him with like 7 minutes left in the game, not with 2 minutes left in the game.
Yeah.
And then you've
it's
got
funny,
the Chris
like you juxtapose that with Golden State, right? Where they play like shit. Like play like shit throughout the Memphis Grizzlies series, right? But at like when Golden State plays like shit versus when Phoenix plays like shit, I trust Golden State to figure it out more, if that makes sense. And their worst game, there's too much variance with the Suns, right? When they're good, they're like, oh my goodness, this is a fucking freight train. Like, I think I remember seeing that in the in some of the New Orleans series. It was like, oh my God, they are so good. And then when they're bad, it's like game seven, it's like, Are you serious? Blow this thing up. At least when the Warriors do it, it's like, oh, okay. It's, yeah. At least in the last 2 minutes, they're going to at least show some heart.
It's never been blow this up with the Warriors. And I would, back to the original point as we finish here, if it were a different ownership, I would assume, and by the way, Tyus Jones is just somebody who I love as a backup point guard. He's still on the books for like $8 million for Memphis. So like, he's not going anywhere. I'm just trying to think of that guard that you could let kind of do this hybrid thing. But I would imagine everybody would come back and they would go, hey, we just won 64. We still have a very young core. And then Chris, like, we don't blow this up. The whole point is you hope to have a team like this. And even if we want to get cute with the Ayton's not a max, he isn't, we cannot find a player like him to slide in. We can't use those resources.
Much, it's too much of this talk and back and forth, man, for like, and it's typical Phoenix Suns stuff. And I get a firsthand like bit of this, like doing the pile with Raja, but it's just too much of like talking and like too many question marks around this team right now. If any other team loses, it's like, all right, bet we come in next year, sign him, figure it out. We're going to do this. It's just too much talk right now, man. And this is the second straight year where it's just too much. I don't trust the Phoenix Suns at this point. I don't know if I probably should have throughout this season, but I don't trust them next year. And I think with the way they're set up, there's a chance they're going to blow it up. And I think they're going to end up like, I just don't trust that front office. I don't. I think James Jones has done a great job, but I think it's above James Jones's head, if that makes sense. Like, I think that he's done a great job building this team, but he could be a victim of some higher powers, you know, if you know what I mean. And I that's always been the way how it's been with Phoenix. When you talk about when, you know, the Colangelo years, where they have just built these great teams and, you know, these great training staffs and the sustained success. But the only thing that kept them from being a San Antonio Spurs type organization was ownership. And this is going to be a test for them this offseason. This is a big offseason for the Phoenix Suns, not just for like next year, but for years to come.
Great work. And I think the James Jones point that you make are terrific, because that's how that quote read. When I read that, I was like, that's a weird way of saying this. All right. That's Logan Murdoch. Check out his piece up on The Ringer. All the work that he does here is terrific with Raja every Monday, The Real Ones podcast. And we'll catch up with you again soon. Thanks, man.
Thanks, bud. Talk to you soon.
This episode is brought to you by Hulu Plus Live TV. Looking for a better way to watch live TV? Stream your favorite sports and shows on over 95 live channels with Hulu Plus Live TV. Get access to Hulu's entire streaming library, Disney Plus and ESPN Plus, all in one plan. Start your free trial of Hulu Plus Live TV today. Live TV plan required. Restrictions apply. Access content from each service separately. Learn more at Hulu.com. Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
You want details? Fine. I drive a Ferrari, 355 Cabriolet. What's up? I have a ridiculous house in the South Fork. I have every toy you can possibly imagine. And best of all, kids, I am liquid. So, now you know what's possible. Let me tell you what's required.
Okay, a couple life advice things that I wanna get to before we dig into them. There was all sorts of reaction to the extended podcast life advice that we did, which was to be expected. First and foremost, the guy that sent in the email followed up and said how much he appreciated it, which meant a lot. Because I know that, you know, I probably came off a little harsh with that. And I think that there are people that when they, like, nobody wants stuff to be hard. So to have a guy be like, yeah, you know, it's kind of hard. And like, this probably, you know, the odds are not in your favor that it's going to work out, which I don't love that maybe that was the overriding message, because I kind of, like I'd said, I think numerous times as well, I love that the opportunity even exists. And if you find your lane and you do a thing and it comes together for a couple of years and you find a way to monetize it, it's like the greatest feeling ever, because you're doing something you're passionate about and you bet on yourself and all those things that I am all for and will tell people to do all the time. But I also want to be super realistic about just, and I think a lot of it is my annoyance sometimes too, when I'll talk to just other people that I am friends with, and I'm kind of like, yeah, like, I don't really know when, how soon you'll be able to monetize this. So I don't know that you start planning it that way. So I thought it meant a lot to me that the guy that sent in the email appreciated the segment so much, because other people, some people loved it, some people did not love it. But the guys that we were talking to specifically were like, hey, cool. You know, thanks for letting us do this. And by the way, you know, he did a little follow-up too. He's like, I hope I didn't come off in the first email completely delusional. Like, right now it's just something fun and we're just trying to figure it out. And that actually made me feel better about, you know, where they're at with everything. But I don't know. We got so much feedback on it that sometimes I swear we could do like post-pod shows, like wrap-ups. Well, I know other shows do that, Stern and all those guys, but it's crazy how much something like that'll happen. And then you think like, God, we could just talk about this forever. But you know, I don't know we're going to do that anytime soon.
Yeah, we could do like a Talking Dead version, like how they used to do that post-show show for the what, but like just for life advice. But I will say really quickly, after we did that segment, I thought about you because, you know, we basically talked about how difficult it was and almost not saying it's not worth it, but like how hard your path is going to have to be to actually make this worthwhile. And I thought about telling that to young Rosillo, and you'd have been like, well, I don't fucking care. I'm going to do it anyway. So it's all about your mindset.
Yeah. You could have, every single person told me not to do anything I've done, which I mean, is sort of my deal. It's just, no, don't try that. You're like, okay, fine. So anyway, Kyle, how's it going?
It's going well. I would just say, I was thinking about, it was sort of like one of our first life advices that got some traction was your thing with salt. You know, remember how like you said, you used to date a girl that didn't like cook with salt. And it's like, it sounds like if you have chemistry is like the salt in food. So if you have that, you at least have the salt, you're at least going somewhere. So if it's obvious that you guys have chemistry, that's really like, that's like the base of it anyway. So everything else has to like kind of go really well and fall into place. But if you have chemistry, you're at least cooking with salt. So I think that's good.
Jeez, how about that?
Did you like that?
Wow. Yeah. That was really good, man.
Thanks.
Appreciate that. Okay. Dog sitting advice. 5'11", 175, 29. Celebrated many elementary school birthday parties at Trenton Thunder games in the late 90s, early 2000s. Well, sounds like I may have invited you to one in 2002. Friend of mine had a business trip last week in Phoenix. Nice resort, Lazy River Golf Course. Do adults get real fired up about Lazy River options at resorts?
Well, don't you? They have one in Vegas where you can drink in it. So I think yes, if it's like an alcoholic one. Yeah.
Not one that serves alcohol. Not.
No, you don't have to be an alcoholic.
You don't have, bro.
This is only for alcoholics.
This is only, which lane are you? Oh, okay. You get a bracelet. Yeah.
This line.
All right. I'm going to put a life jacket on you for the whole weekend, by the way. All right, cool. Thanks.
More than that, yeah.
Yeah. No, wear it when you leave the pool. Thank you.
Yeah.
It's good to bounce good off advice. The shit. Conveniently scheduled around the 1 year wedding anniversary. They were excited at the prospect of going together as a couple and asked if I'd be open to watching their dog for a week, to which I gladly accepted. I own a condo in New England. It's a two floor situation where I own and live on the second floor and the renter lives on the first floor. Look at this guy putting away equity. Separate unit, separate owner. There are a lot of dogs in the neighborhood. I work day shift full time with a girlfriend who would be available that week, with the exception of Tuesday until one. The dog was dropped off on Monday night. I went to work at 6 a.m. on Tuesday. The girlfriend showed up at 1 on Tuesday, and one or both of us were with the dog the rest of the week. On Sunday morning, we found this note attached, taped to my front door. I will start with asking repeatedly, I love dogs, but I add, this doesn't make any sense, that first sentence, but I think this is what the attempt is, because you already know it's not going to go great if there's a note. I will start with asking repeatedly, I love dogs, but nonstop, three underlines, barking for no reason is unacceptable. I work 6 days a week, 12 hours a day. I cannot tolerate the noise every few hours home. Please handle. It woke me up at 4 a.m. or 7 a.m. Well, hey, man, if you're still asleep
get
at
after
7.
It, pal. Yeah.
Yeah. You're doing 12-hour days, but you're sleeping in.
Doing it wrong.
I don't know. Matt's not checking out. I think as soon as I saw the 6 days, 12 hours a day thing, I'm like, yeah, maybe. But I don't know.
Are we counting commutes in there, pal? We must be. Come on.
I just immediately was starting to be dismissive of the complaint. Once yes. It felt like there was a lot of rounding up going on.
Yeah.
I cannot tolerate the nuisance of every few hours. Woke me up, blah, blah, blah. Didn't stop until I left at 1 p.m. It echoes right over my home. Thank you. So basically, this guy's your tenant, right? What's the debate? I mean, it's a one-off. You say, hey, my fault, dog's in a new surrounding here. It won't happen again, because, by the way, it's not going to happen again. And this guy's going to have to, I don't know, be more efficient with his 12-hour days, I guess. I don't know. The note's kind of a mess, too. So when the note's a mess, there's nothing that hurts your argument worse than a poorly written email or text. When you write something, you're like, what the fuck were you writing? Be like, oh, you know, sorry, I'm bad at grammar. I don't know. This is a quick one. Quick ruling here. You didn't get the dog. It's a guest. It's your house. Conversation over.
What if it was a baby? What are you going to do?
Probably not leave it for 6 hours.
Yeah. I guess that's fair.
Look, the bottom floor, top floor thing, I've never understood the bottom floor people. Do you think no one ever walks? Like, do you not walk in your apartment? Do you not close doors? Do people not come in and out? Like, there's stuff, there are people that lose their shit over the years and all the places I've lived where I was like, so you think you're never supposed to hear footsteps? That's what you think you signed up for? That seems like a lot. Now, granted, sometimes I was totally at fault the entire time. But there are other times I get older, I'd be like, I don't think it's supposed to be zero noise ever heard.
I agree. I used to live under some furniture rearrangers, though, and it was like, I could tell the difference. Like, it was like, all right, maybe the guy's got a heavy foot. I could see that. But then it was just like, I mean, it was like, all right, that's a couch. That's like their apartment is changing every week. It seemed like Sundays they like to get after and just move stuff around. So I think there is a difference. But yeah, you should be able to tell the difference as well.
Well, the irony here is I have my dog barking in the background right now. So I guess.
Yeah, I just saw you muted. I was like, it must be a dog thing.
Yeah, we got some people working outside and they listen, dogs bark. It is what it is. Like, people that get mad about dogs barking, they shouldn't be barking all day, but, you know, they bark. If that annoys you, it is what it is. We've kind of got lucky, though, where our dogs don't really wake us up in the morning. Like, our dogs would sleep until noon if they could. So just depends on the dog. But I would say this is a temporary thing. I wouldn't worry about it too much.
Agreed. And also, like, you said like a poorly written note. How about just a mean note in general is like the greatest way to hurt your cause, I think. Would have been better if you're the other guy, if you could like knock or something and just have a conversation. Because, I mean, I haven't been left too many notes, but I remember in our old Ringer office, a different office like left us a note and we were like, all right, well, let's make sure we do exactly the thing they're upset about because we didn't like the way that happened at all. And I'm not saying that was the right response, but just kind of a mean or like upset note is just seems like the worst way to get your point across. So if you're thinking about leaving a note, I just don't think it's going to go the way that you want it to go. That's all I'm saying. Mm. Unless it's like a sorry note or a thank you note, I wouldn't leave a stop doing this note if you could help it.
So kinder notes, or maybe in place of a note, a gentler approach.
That's what I mean. I think notes are only good in certain ways, and it's definitely not a change your actions. Like, don't leave like a cease and desist note. You know what I mean? Like, where you're just like, stop this or else. I'm not saying like an actual cease and desist, but it's like it has the airs of a cease and desist note. Be like, oh, you're telling me via note? It's not a great medium for what you're trying to do here. That's all I'm saying.
All right. Yeah, no, I remember when I first started working at Ringer, and then after like 2 weeks, my desk was missing. And I was like, oh, this is nice. Sets a good tone.
Was there a note in place of the desk?
Didn't think you were using this, so.
No, my stuff, nice, that I, the stuff that had been on the desk was left on the floor in the corner. Ooh. And the desk was gone. Because there was, I don't know, there was kind of like, oh, this guy's here now. And then there was the conversation about me coming in more often. And I was like, yeah, I don't know that I'm going to be coming in a ton, you know?
Somebody just saw that as an opportunity. And they were like, all right, well, we're still
up. And then it was like, oh, yeah, I'm definitely not going to be stopping by a ton now. You guys just took my desk. I've been here 2 weeks.
Well, then he would just come in and just be like, I'm just going to sit in the studio, I guess. It's like, all right, hopefully nobody has this using the studio an hour before Ryan's podcast, because now that's where he's writing his notes. Good job, everyone.
Right. I'd have some guesses. probably a couple guesses. I'd probably do all right if you gave me 3 guesses. All right.
I'm glad you're still not mad about it then.
Well, because it was like, hey, we're putting a desk in here. We know, you know, you're not going to have your own office because you're going to hear a lot. He's like, no, I didn't expect to have my own office. That's totally fine. Because the ESPN office stuff was like a big deal. That was a huge deal. And then it felt like radio just kept giving all theirs to First Take. And you were like, what is going on here? Like, these guys aren't even here. And they've got 2 primo offices.
Oh, yeah. We used to set up meetings in Kellerman's office because he was never there.
Kellerman had a full-blown furnished office, whole deal. Wasn't there ever, yeah, ever.
He used to eat lunch in there. It was actually pretty private. It was nice.
Yeah, because he was never there. But you,
it was like a lounge.
It wasn't a lounge. It was just a regular office because it used to be my office. And I switched sides because I wanted to be on the other side. But there was like this weird thing. If you didn't have an office, they definitely didn't want you to have one. You know what I mean? Because they didn't want to like have whatever the standard of somebody having an office. They wouldn't be like, oh, now Russillo has an office. And then you should have seen when I had Kellerman's old office and I had that office, there was more foot traffic. So obviously I wanted to go where there were less people. And sometimes I'd leave the door open. And the number of TV people that came by that didn't have offices, because there's way more people on TV at ESPN. And so say somebody had been an anchor like 10 plus years. They see me with a full-blown office, even though at that point I'm like, hey, I'm one of like 4 people that are actually in Bristol every day that's on the lineup. And there's like 8 offices. So why wouldn't I? Like, there's no reason why I wouldn't have had one at that point. And then I'll never get one TV guy like does a like an old man thing where he leads inside of the threshold of the open doorway and like taps his fingers. You know, he's just tapping away.
Mm-hmm. Pretty spacious in here.
And he's like, oh, look at you. Look who got an office. And the whole time I just want to be like, this is about you not having one in building 4.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, that's the thing, is they're not even close to each other. Like, if a TV person was to have an office in the radio area, it wouldn't make any sense. Like, Kellerman's office was there, but he was never there, so it didn't even make sense anyway. It didn't matter.
No, it's because Stephen A. had one. Because Stephen A. had one, then Kellerman had to have one. But Kellerman wasn't even doing radio yet. So that's why we were like, wait, how come we're losing another office here? But then it was like, yeah, but we don't want to give an office to like this person below that. So yeah, I'll admit when I came back up after 2 weeks at the Ringer, and then I walk in and sit at my desk and set up the laptop and start prepping for the show, all my shit's in the corner. I go, oh, okay. I think okay.
That was the one in the Titus and Tate office right next to ours, right?
Yes. Yes. I was like, oh. Hey.
Kyle, do you know who this was or no?
I don't know.
Are you aware of this?
I think it, honestly, I don't think it was as deliberate as he thinks. I think that like that was the floating desk. And then I think they just kind of hired another person that needed a desk all the time. And they were like, well, this is the one that's going. So I figured they thought Ryan was okay with it. But new shout out to Spotify now. No offices. No one has an office. It's like library style. Just get in where you fit
in. Very open.
Yeah. I'm still learning how to work with that, but it's fine.
Yeah, that would drive me crazy if I couldn't get alone time prepping for a radio show every day. All right. So that was talking desks and talking offices too, which I don't think
he didn't ask, but that's all right. We gave it to you.
Yeah. I don't know if you can help with this one, Kyle. I don't want to make any assumptions. 29, 5'7", 170, 310 bench. 5'7", 170, 310 bench.
That's a lot, dude.
That is a lot.
12-hour workday as well.
Good for you. 6 days a week. Currently living in my hometown, small town about an hour north of Atlanta. Hot Atlanta, the locals call it. I'm employed by a company. I'm going to be a little more vague for this guy for his own benefit. I'm employed by a company based in the town. As far as the day-to-day goes, great job. 15-minute commute, laid-back work environment. I'm extremely close with numerous coworkers. He puts in another detail here, which I'm going to leave out. Do you want to get busted? All this comes with a caveat, however, and that caveat is that I'm grossly underpaid. Not for the area. Keep in mind, small, bordering on rural town, but I believe I'm underpaid based on my skills, aptitude, overall value I can bring to a business. Most of us think we're underpaid. This has never been much of an issue. I overlook the pay because I do enjoy the workplace so much. I'm single, no children. I'm able to supplement my pay through side projects such as officiating basketball in order to live a comfortable life financially. So he's not hurt for cash, but you know what? Just because as a non-kids, no wife guy, you know, every now and then I could feel like that was sort of being baked into the offer and the price a little when I was younger. And I would just be like, it's not my fault. I'm trying to keep the carbon footprint down.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you know what? Let me take less. No, you're right. I don't have to buy diapers. No, I'll take less than that person. I have
just doing my part.
Yeah. Oh, that person show no one listens to? Yeah, I'll take less than that person. Ooh. I don't have any kids. All right.
Basketball official on the side. That sounds like a terrible gig. I don't know why you'd want to be an official unless you're like an NBA official making a ton of money.
All right. So a week ago, sorry, I'm doing a bad job getting to this point. A former coworker of mine forwarded a job posting to me at her new employer. I rarely look for other jobs, but I decided to see where this would lead now. And I'm sitting on an offer nearly $20,000 more than what I make at my current day job. So that's good evidence there that our guy was or is underpaid. There's one issue, drug test. Okay. We'll be talking PEDs here with this massive bench. I'm embarrassed to even say that it's a factor. This isn't Michael Scott one time at a concert type situation. Great call. I'm also not getting stoned every single day, but I do enjoy a couple pulls from the weed pen while I enjoy a Michelob Ultra and watch hoops in the evening. All right. So you like to smoke weed. I've not accepted the new job offer. I do not want to leave my current employer because of the reasons listed in the beginning of the email, but that type of raise is hard to pass up. I've been told the drug test can be done on the first day of employment, which would put me anywhere from 3 to 4 weeks clean by the time the test is taken. The problem is if I were to fail at that point, not only do I lose my new job, my current job is also long gone at that point, and I'm left with nothing. So my conflict is take the new job and risk it all for the pay bump, or just stay comfortable and happy where I am. As noted, I'm extremely embarrassed to even be in this situation with love advice on the risk of a drug test dilemma. Tips on giving me a better chance of passing if I go that route. He says this in the email, parentheses, Kyle. Sorry. And even the general aspect on leaving my comfortable job that I'm happy at for a new position, mainly just for the financial gain. All right. On just the raise part of it, like I get it. You know, if you're at the new job, you're making $20,000, but you're miserable and you like your current or former setup, I get it. But I don't know. I mean, you're the one that said it was a huge raise. And, you know, depending on where you're at, $20,000 can be a big, big lifestyle bump. As far as the drug test, this is not my expertise here, but I only from having buddies. Kyle, should I just go to you on this one?
Well, it sounds like you got something to say here. What are you going to say?
Well, they would always tell me about the tea. What was it, Golden Seal? It was something that you could buy and you would flush your system out and it would only take a couple days. I do remember when my friend went to go buy it because he was getting a corporate gig. And you know, he's sitting around drinking this awful tea for like 24 hours.
It's like a gallon. Flush, yeah.
Right. It's a gallon of the stuff that you have to make. But I remember he went to like the local head shop where, you know, back then teenagers would be like, did you see that bong they have in the window? Like, you know, like that was actually entertainment before, you know, weed became destigmatized in the last 20 years. But he went in and was like, hey, do you have, you know, whatever? And the guy was like, yep. And then he pulled it out from like behind the counter because it wasn't like point of sale. It wasn't like right there. I don't even know if that makes any sense the way I just phrased that. And he was like, all right, so this will get my, I'll be clear in 2 days. And he said like the wrong thing. And the guy put it behind the counter. He was like, I can't sell it to you.
Yeah, because it's not a weed pipe either. It's a tobacco pipe. It's just, you got to say the right thing. I mean, this sounds like it was years ago. It's a Tibet's for tobacco. This is for grinding tobacco.
20 years ago.
Yeah.
This is 20 years ago. That's right. He said weed. It's exactly right, Kyle. Okay. So, Kyle, 3 to 4 weeks out from if he just shut it down, what is it, 30 or 60 days in the system?
I thought it was 30 days. I mean, and also like, here's the good, you got to wonder. It's 2022. Are they testing for weed? Do they want to make sure that you weren't like, you know, doing other shit like 2 days ago? You know, are you sure it's for weed? Two, do you know what kind it is? Are they going to take like a hair thing? I mean, I don't know how, if it's a one and done, if they're just like, we just want to see if you've smoked weed in the last, you know, 6 months or whatever. If it's a hair thing, I mean, I don't know. But I mean, 4 weeks, you're fine. I mean, I had a guy, one of my good friends was on probation and just couldn't stop smoking weed. And he was like, you know, drinking like vinegar and just doing all this weird stuff. It was just way too important to him for stop smoking weed. I mean, I thought it was crazy, but 4 weeks, you're fine. Get a special thing. I mean, get the tea, spend some money or whatever, but also, you know, you could just drink like a couple gallons of water and just run a little bit harder in your reffing gigs. And I've heard like a red meat burger will do something for you too. I don't know. But 4 weeks, if you just take a couple precautions, you're fine. And then, but I don't understand why this would only happen one time. But I'm surprised places are still testing for weed anyway, given that it's like, it's pretty much decriminalized most places and it's legal a bunch of places. So I don't, I'm surprised if they were testing for weed, but I mean, I don't know what kind of place you work either. I don't know if you're like an air traffic controller or something, but
I think you're
fine. I would wonder if this is going to happen. Either just stop smoking weed if it's that important to you to have a, you know, make 20 grand more to start. Or I would wonder, like, is it really a one-time thing and they're not going to like randomly drug test? I don't know. I thought that that way of doing things was over for normal jobs, but I guess not. I guess
the one-time drug test? Yeah, I don't know. I remember a radio station a long time ago that I worked at. There was another guy that we were getting started with and he was freaking out. So he went and did the whole tea thing and he was like freaking out because it went from fill-in to full-time gig quicker than his timeline was gonna have him. So he's like, I can't believe I'm gonna lose this job because of this. And then of course he was like, how come you're not worried? I was like, I don't smoke pot or anything. And he's like, you went to Vermont?
Like, right. Yep.
I know. Kyle or Steve, you have anything to add to this?
No, I mean, I wasn't a big weed guy. Not a big weed guy now, but I just did a quick Google search. And they have these things that you can do that are like 5-day detox cleansers. Are they just like fraudulent? I mean, it's like $100.
No, you can get it done in 2 days, Steve.
THC detox kit, and you get like some test strips, and then you could know whether or not it's still in your system. Isn't that the way to go? I don't know. Or am I being duped here? I don't really know.
I've seen a guy do it in 2 days. I mean, it seemed like he did it like even in 1 day. I don't know if he was messing around with tests or whatever, but it can happen. It's really about how determined you are. If you've got plenty of time, I wouldn't worry about it at all. But I mean, you could get it done in 2 days, I think. I mean, I've seen a guy drink like 4 gallons of water and take some vinegar shots and do everything. He's like, all right, I got to run. He's like running before probation and it worked. So, I mean, you can get it done.
Best
if you
shape
got four
of his
weeks,
life.
I think you're fine.
He's staying hydrated. He's working out.
Yes.
He's like, man, that guy loves vinegar. He's in here again.
Apple cider vinegar. That's the one.
Like, I just like to pickle stuff, guys.
Yeah.
You guys don't have a home pickling kit? It's weird. Yeah, I don't know how much more we could say to this on this.
I don't know if we helped, but yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if we helped anybody today, really.
Well, if you feel good about it, can't you just tell your boss you got an offer? And if you're going to take it anyway, maybe you'll get like, what if he gave you half as much as a raise to stay and you don't even have to worry about this? That would be a win-win-win.
Jesus, I feel like such an idiot. That should have been the first thing we all said. Yep.
Well done, Kyle. There you
go. Kyle, spirit award for Kyle today.
Cooking with salt.
Keep smoking weed. Get about a 10-gram bump. Don't have to go work in the new place. No drug test. Leave the vinegar at home. All right, that's life advice. LifeAdviceRR@gmail.com. Thanks to Kyle, who crushed it today, and Steve. Yeah, that'll do it. Please subscribe. Ring or Spotify. Ryan Russillo Podcast.